Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you listening in here this Monday. Day before Veterans Day. We're going to talk a little bit about military life today and looking forward to that conversation. Glad to have you connected with us today. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross at the controls, and Ted, our program today probably should, we should probably talk about how do you make those bags of leaves look like a giant snowman.
That's a good point. See, I just mentioned to you before we went on the air, I got 16 of those bags thanks
all right.
to working in the yard on Saturday. Sure. Got to get to the curb somehow. But.
Did you feel a little pressure? You're kind of watching the sky and you just know, hey, foot of snow coming.
Oh, man. We're in it now, at least here in our area, the Twin Cities. I think Sioux Falls might have been spared. Madison might have been spared, Iowa. Okay. But Fargo.
Well, although they're probably going to get some freezing rain, aren't they?
I think so. Yeah, some residual effect there. But Duluth, the Northland here, we're in it now, and I think there's no turning back.
Fargo's just, it's the all the cold from Alaska that in the Northwest Territories, it's always going to hit Fargo first. So if they could all just kind of wear their down coats and hold their arms out and kind of slow the wind down a little bit, that might help us.
Yeah.
The season has changed, hasn't it?
It's here, and we're going to focus on other things, though, today, right? And
Other than weather?
Important calendar dates here upon us.
And I happened to notice today, Carissa, our assistant scheduler here, just mentioned that today is the anniversary of the Marine Corps. 1775, the Marine Corps is established.
Oh.
We're going to talk to a Air Force spouse today. Terry Barnes is with us. Her husband's in the Air Force. We're talking military today. In fact, we're going to focus on some stories around the table, some laughter, wisdom, and strength in military life. That's the title of a book that Terry has edited. And also we've got a couple of copies of Spouse Calls, Messages from a Military Life. And we'll give those away today, actually, as well. If you'd like to join in the conversation, I hope you will. This is a day we want to just simply talk about the men and women who serve our country in this most important way. And leading up to Veterans Day just seemed like a good time to just talk, particularly about the spouses. You know, we honor the veterans, and tomorrow is a day where we honor veterans that have served. But, for the military spouse, it's like, boy, every day is a day of remembering and, wondering. And so,
If you can keep a dry eye watching those reunion videos when militaries come back, I don't know if you're human because, man, it is so moving every time I see these reunions with families, mothers that are away from kids and fathers as well. Yeah, so it is important to remember them and say thank you. The NFL did that a bunch over the weekend, too, for Veterans Day. So.
Very nice to see that. So, well, let's welcome in our guest today, Terry Barnes, a military wife and mother of three. They're living in Illinois at the moment, and she writes Spouse Calls weekly for Stars and Stripes and is the author of Spouse Calls, Messages from a Military Life, and blogs at spousecallsatstripes.com. She's contributed several other books about military life, has worked in journalism and kind of a graduate from Baylor University and has lived really about everywhere, it sounds like, and which is sort of, I think we'll maybe start with that, Terry, because as a military wife, I mean, it's for someone who's in the full-time military, you end up moving a lot, don't you?
I do, and thank you, Neil, for having me on today. I'm really happy to be here. But yes, moving is kind of a fixture of our life. It's one of the ironically kind of permanent things that we that we do move. So that is definitely a challenge.
There's no real way around it, I guess, is it? I mean, because it's you're moving for different training or promotions or any number there or assignments, right?
Right. Usually from anywhere from 1 year to 3 years is standard, sometimes less, sometimes more, but usually military families move about that often. So it's something that often I'm asked, you probably get used to that, right? Because you move all the time. But if every move were the same, you could get used to them, but every move is different. And so it's a matter of riding that wave and knowing what is solid in your life and what doesn't change and being able to adapt to what does change.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about that. I mean, I think, you know, some advice, particularly maybe as we encounter, well, I suppose most full-time military are living on bases, or is that not the case? I
mean, not necessarily. Okay. Many do, but probably just as many or more elect not to live on base. And, for example, National Guard and Reserve families usually don't live on base at all or even near a base sometimes. So not necessarily, but whether you live on base or off base, and if the job requires it, you still move. So. Yeah.
And was it harder for you or your kids, you think, or maybe was it different depending on their ages?
Oh, it's very different because of their ages, and I would say it's probably harder on my kids, except that as a parent watching your kids, I think it's harder to watch your kids go through those difficult transitions than it is to go through them for yourself, in my experience. And when it just depends. Sometimes when they're really young, it's easier than when they're middle grade, middle school. Those are probably the most difficult years to move and leave friends, because leaving friends is the low light of having to move is leaving friends, and that's a difficult time for kids. When they get a little more perspective, high school or you know, late high school, then they're able to see that they will be able to adapt. But it's different in every move, because sometimes high school moves can be really difficult. As you know, you form strong bonds in those high school years, so that can be a difficult time for kids to move too.
So any maybe coping skills or any advice that you have, I mean, that made it better for your family?
Well, as I said, it's different every time, but yes, definitely our faith was always a really strong part of our life as a military family. And so, as I said, knowing those things that don't change, and you can't really remedy when a child is crying because they're leaving their best friend behind, you can't make that better. All you can do is comfort and say, you know, we will get through this together as a family. And then there's also remembering. You remember when we first moved to, and named the last base, how you didn't want to come here and you didn't have friends, but you made friends. And sometimes those arguments backfire, because then you say, yeah, but then I'm going to leave those friends. But to remind them that we've made it through before, we build our faith and our ability to cope on past experiences. And so reminding them that we've done this before, we can do it again. God will always be with us wherever we go. Mom and Dad will always be there for you wherever you go. So those things are helpful, but there's no there's no real remedy for those tears. They're going to come, and you have to get through them.
Talk a little bit about the faith, maybe as a military family. I mean, we celebrate, we honor the men and women who serve and have served, but we all need faith. Talk a bit about how maybe you does it take on more meaning as a military spouse?
Well, that's hard for me to say. I wouldn't want to compare faith in military to faith outside military. I've been in a military family my entire life because my dad was in the military. So, but I do know that, as with many or most Christians, my faith is central. Our faith as a family has been central to us. And so if that never changes, it doesn't matter where we move. It doesn't matter where Dad goes, where he gets deployed. I mean, there are a lot of things that matter about that, but our faith doesn't change based on those things. So that's just always been a very strong point for us. And my husband is a chaplain, and so we've been always very connected to the military chapel wherever we go in most of the bases. And so that's always been a strong point, because then we connect with other military families who are also Christians and share that faith. And that tends to be when you move and transition and you go there and you go to a military chapel, you connect immediately with other people who relate not only to your life of faith, but to your life in the military. So that's just been a very strong point, but just knowing that we could always rely on the Lord, that he's always there.
You've written a great book called Spouse Calls, Messages from a Military Life, which is essentially just columns, right, that you write regularly for Stars and Stripes, right?
Yes, that's right. It's a collection of some of my columns. I've been writing Spouse Calls for Stars and Stripes since 2007. I began writing weekly for them. And it's, you know, it's a mainstream newspaper. It's a newspaper that is specifically for the military community wherever we are, both in print and online. So it's not a Christian publication per se. But because it's my personal column and I write about my life, I write about other military families' lives, I've been able to write about my faith in that column and just talk about how military life has illustrated faith for me or how my faith has gotten me through just occasionally that I've been able to write about that.
So that's been
a real blessing of the time I've been able to write this column. And then when I collected my favorite columns for the book, I included a lot of those in the book. For example, there's one that's about a memorial service that we had to go to when we were living in Germany for a friend who had died, and it happened that my niece was born the same weekend. She was back in the States. My sister was back in the States. So on the day that we were attending this memorial service for our friend who died, my sister was in the delivery room back in Oklahoma delivering her first baby. And we're in the memorial service, and that question that you always ask when someone dies in an untimely way, why, you know, why did this happen? And there's no answer. But in that situation, I came home, and the way I process things a lot of times is to write about it. And I was able to write that life is God's answer to death, not just the birth of another child, but the birth of his son, and that his answer to all of our suffering and all of our questions was the birth of his son. And it was around Christmas time, and so I wrote that for my Christmas column and was really able to say about my own faith that this is my answer, that this is my answer that comes from God in my faith and my life, that the birth of God's son is the answer to the questions that we have in life.
It's called "A Child Is Born," and it's one of the great articles in this compilation. It's called "Spouse Calls." It's a book based on the popular Stars and Stripes column from Terry Barnes, and subtitles "Messages from a Military Life." We've got a couple of copies of that to give away, and you know, if you have experienced military life, then you will appreciate this. You maybe read Terry's columns. You'd like to just call and chat with her. You're welcome to do that. Or if you have someone that is serving today and would like to just honor them, we'd be honored to have you just mention their name, and we want to just recognize those men and women that are serving today. Thank you for your service, and thank you for staying tuned to Connecting Faith. We talk more with Terry Barnes. We'll maybe pick up on that topic about funerals. You probably attended funerals at a higher average rate than most Americans. We'll get some perspective on that and more as we talk military life and military wives with Terry Barnes here on Connecting Faith. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number, by the way, 877-933-2484. That's Letters from War, right? That great tune from Mark Schultz. And sadly, our nation has been at war for the last number of years. Terry Barnes is with us today, who has lived that journey on several missions, I guess, and assignments. Terry is a military wife and mother, and she writes Spouse Calls weekly for Stars and Stripes. And we're talking about the compilation that she's put together in the book called Spouse Calls, Messages from a Military Life, and it's from Elva Reisa Publishing, which is actually has they kind of specialize in publishing books for military families. We've got some copies to give away. I'd love to have you join us or sign up for a copy at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Terry, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, you mentioned being in Germany, attending a funeral for someone who died in battle, how do you honor those who have paid that ultimate sacrifice? Maybe what advice would you have for us that we might be, I don't know, just recognize their sacrifice and service?
Yeah, well, you mentioned that you think probably that military people attend more funerals than than maybe other people. But actually, the service that I mentioned in that column was a memorial that was in Germany. But the funerals happen. They happen in the small towns where these men and women are from. And so really the connection is there in the hometown. It's there in the civilian community just as much as it is for us, because those are the family members who lost someone. And in fact, when we were stationed in Germany, I wrote about this. This is one called Born on the Fourth, that I read Stars and Stripes one day, and it said the 1,000th GI was killed in Afghanistan. This was in 2010. And there was no name listed, and I read it. I remember thinking, you know, why do we have a news story about the 1,000th, and why is that more significant than the 999th? Because mourning families don't care about those numbers. That's not significant to them, but it makes the news. And so I read that, and I went on, and I didn't know who the person was, but I got an email a few days later from my Aunt June, who lives outside San Antonio, Texas, in a small town that's not military. And she wrote to tell me that one of their family friend's son had been killed in Afghanistan, and he was the 1,000th military member to die in Afghanistan. And so that connection that I didn't have living the same or 1 hour away from the time zone where this story happened, I didn't have that connection. But back in their hometown, that connection was there. And my Aunt June was taking, you know, food to the family, and the funeral was there in Kerrville, Texas. And that's where it happened. So our nation is not untouched by these events. I don't think that military members are necessarily more connected to the funerals and the deaths of these people who give their lives in service to our nation. Maybe we feel it more corporately because they are one of us, naturally fallen, you know, those who fall, serve next to those who fall, definitely feel that tie, as close as blood, I believe. But I don't think I should minimize the impact that these things have on civilian communities and on the families who serve. And so I was able to interview this young man's mom, and I never would have done that just because of the number, but I did it because I had that connection through my Aunt June, and I was able to talk to her. And he was a Marine, which you mentioned that this is the birthday of the Marine Corps. Yeah. And it was a Christian family, and the mom talked about how they hoped that the notoriety that surrounded her son's death would just remind everyone of all the sacrifices that were being made, not just by her son, but by all of the service members all over who were serving in Afghanistan and in Iraq at the time. So those things touch us everywhere. They touch us as a military community, but they also connect very closely with our civilian world as well.
I read a couple of your columns where you talk about the moms of a soldier. That, you know, we oftentimes sort of focus on the military spouse, but mom is both proud and I suppose fearful, right? I mean that's a tough role to play, isn't it?
It is. It's very tough, and I can't speak firsthand from that because I don't have a child serving in the military, but I have. Two of my very best friends have sons who served, one in the Army and one in the Air Force, and one still serving. And both of them also have active duty husbands, or had active duty husbands at the time. And they both said that sending your husband off is one level of fear and one level of letting go and faith and all those things that it requires. But to send your child is a whole other level, and to have that child and you knowing that they're in harm's way, as you can probably imagine, any parent can imagine that. It's not just military parents, and of course it's not just military members who send their children. It's, you know, civilian families as well who send their children into battle or into service. So it's definitely a difficult balance, because the parents have less connection sometimes with the military because they're not dependents or they're not considered officially family members like I am as a spouse. And so they have a little less connection. Sometimes they have a little less support because they may not live in a military town or be in a military community. And sometimes they feel that even more, or in a different way. It's a very difficult thing for moms and dads to send their children off to war and to be in harm's way.
Our friend Chaplain John Morris always talks about it. He says, you know, the military men and women get the awards, but it's the wives and the moms and dads back home that are they're making a bigger sacrifice as well in many ways.
Well, it's very definitely a team, a family effort. It's something that we all do together, and we don't feel like one of us bears it more than the other. We all have our positions to fill in the family, and you know, my husband goes and he serves where he's called, and I'm called to be here at home with our children and to make sure that things continue to run as smoothly and everyone gets to school and everyone gets to the doctor and those kinds of things get taken care of, that when my husband returns, whether he's gone a year or 2 weeks, that the family is still operating, the home is still home, and things are taken care of, and that I feel is my mission as a spouse. So,
and that's certainly a way where we as a local church community can certainly help and support, can't we?
Well, yes, definitely, definitely. And I think the best way that local churches can support is just to be aware of military families in your congregation or in your neighborhood, even if they don't come to your church, that if there are military families in the neighborhood, that sometimes they do need a little extra help when a spouse is away, whether it's with yard work or whether it's with child care. You know, sometimes it's a mom who's away at war or away at training or wherever, and sometimes it's a dad. So there are different, you know, the different needs based on the family. But by being aware of military families, particularly National Guard and Reserve, sometimes that, as I mentioned before, that's in a town where there's not a military base, and so there's not a military support network that might be there otherwise. So for a church to step in and say, oh, let me shovel your snow when 12 inches of snow falls in Minneapolis, those kinds of things just speak volumes. Actions speak so much louder than words. But to say thank you is nice, but to also to bear that, to share that burden with them, to say, I'm willing to help you in tangible ways, and also to befriend military families. Sometimes it's difficult to make friends when you move in and people know you're leaving in a couple years and they don't want to invest in you. It's nice if a civilian family, a civilian congregation is willing to invest. And we've found many times that people are. We've had many good civilian friends, and that means a lot.
Yeah. You know, you write at the beginning of the book about experiencing life at the intersection of conflict and the commonplace. And I thought that was just a good way to put it, that, you know, that, you know, there's much common, but then there's also that, you know, that literally life and death conflict. That's where that is. So maybe talk a little bit about that and what that looks like day to day.
Well, that sums up our life pretty well. I mean, I've seen wounded warriors at Walter Reed and Bethesda medical centers, but I wasn't there writing a story. I was there for a medical appointment, maybe for me or for one of my kids. And so yes, that is where our life is lived. And it's important for us to see the significance of both the large and the small events in our lives, and sometimes to see one in light of another, and sometimes that's what I write about, is those small things and how they have a larger significance. I wrote about a story, a fire that happened when we lived in Germany. There was a fire that destroyed a warehouse, and at the time it contained all the household goods of about 100 military families who were either moving in or moving out, and their household goods were being stored in that warehouse until they could be transported. And everything was lost. And we had a new chaplain and his wife who had just arrived, and I hadn't met them before. We just met them when they moved in, and their belongings were in that warehouse. And I ran into this chaplain's wife, her name is Patty, at the base exchange, and she was walking through the aisles and writing down replacement values because she had to make an insurance claim for all the stuff that she had, but she could no longer see, but she had to make a list for the insurance claim. But the small thing that I remember out of that story is that she said they lost all their photo albums. They lost, you know, the significant things. And she said, even if it was charred, I would have liked to have had one baby picture. Mm. Some things you just can't replace. And those are the small, significant things in our life that we need to be aware of.
Let's talk more with Terry Barnes about messages from a military life. It's Spouse Calls, the name of her column, the name of the book. We've got some copies to give away, and you'd like to have a copy or join the conversation. It's 877-93-FAITH.
To be an American, where at least I know I'm free. I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
Oh, that's worth hearing a time or two, isn't it? Thank you for the men and women who serve in our nation's armed forces. That we're so honored and proud and glad to have Terry Barnes on with us today. Terry is a military wife and a mother of three, and she writes Spouse Calls, which is a weekly column for Stars and Stripes, the newspaper of the military, and the author of Spouse Calls, Messages from Military Life, which is a compilation of some of her favorites. And we got a couple of copies to give away and would be honored to have you give us a call and ask for a copy. We'll do a drawing here at the end of the show. Terry has been writing that column since, I guess about since 07, I think. So, you know, it's 7 or so years been doing that. I was interested. One of the columns caught my attention. It's called Green Bags, and it had to do with your husband packing again for another deployment. Talk a little bit about what that's like, when the deployment orders come. You're a mom of three kids. Is it harder when they're younger or older? Does it change? Is it hard every time?
Yes, it's hard every time. It's hard every time. And it's hard in different ways depending on the ages of the kids. But just about any military family will tell you that once you get the orders and you think you know the date, you just wish it would come and get over with. I mean, it sounds terrible to say, but the time leading up to a deployment, from the time you know that it's going to happen until he or she actually leaves, is a very difficult time, because you're trying to take care of all these things that you think need to be taken care of before that important person leaves your household. And there's a lot of paperwork to do. There's packing to do. There's a lot of preparation. In many cases, there's training. And so that military member may be called away from, be away for 2 weeks and back home and then leave again. And it's just there's a lot of transition. There's a lot of back and forth and extremes and dynamics of just a family unit going through a lot of changes and all along throughout that anticipating that departure. And there's that anticipation is sometimes elevated above what the actual event is, anticlimax, when it actually happens, when they actually leave, because you've been through this emotional ringer of preparation. So that can be more difficult than actual departure sometimes. Depending on, and that also depends on what the ages are of the kids and how many kids are in the household. So preparing your kids for deployment is, you have to balance telling the truth about the danger of a situation with the age appropriateness and what they're ready to hear. And as kids get older, sometimes they're more adaptable to the length of time, and they can look at a calendar and say, okay, Dad will be back in this many months. But they also, at that age, understand more about the dangers. When they're younger, they struggle with the time. And how long is Dad gone? Is he home tomorrow? Will he be home tomorrow? And sometimes you answer that question every day. Is it next week? Will he be home for my birthday? But they also don't have a full awareness of the situation and what's at stake. So, there's difficult portions of each of those depending on the age of the child.
And, of course, you've always got that green bag out in the garage ready to go, right?
At a moment's
notice.
That's right. And that I wrote the first part of that column really right after 9/11 in 2001, because up until that point, as I said, I've been a military kid all my life, and my husband and I had been in the military for several years already, and we had three children. But our life was very different after 9/11, and those green bags had been out in the garage, and we hadn't seen them since Desert Storm, and the kids had never really seen them or known their significance. But when we brought them out into the living room, and my husband opened them up and started checking to see, okay, what do I need to update and what needs to be packed, because this was probably on September 12th. He knew he would be going soon. He didn't know when, but he knew he'd be going soon. And so that, to us, represented the uncertainty that had entered our lives as a military family. Those green bags represented that uncertainty. But in reality, that uncertainty in life is always there for all of us. But we, because of the events of 9/11, I think we, and probably our nation as well, had to go and look at those green bags and go, oh, okay, life is uncertain. And now we know it for sure. We should have known it before, but now we know it for sure. So that was what those green bags represented to me. And then there were several other deployments that followed that one, and the green bags came out again and again. And so each time those signaled that reminder that life is uncertain, but God is not. And that's what I was able to write in my column, that's where it was for us. We can't answer the questions the kids have. When's Dad coming back? Will he be safe? But we can only say life is uncertain, but God is not. He knows the answer, even if we don't know it.
And really, I mean, 9/11 kind of changed life for all military families, really all of us, but certainly for the military men and women, right?
It really did. It really did. And my children, I would say probably most people in the military today don't even remember what military life was like before that. My kids certainly don't. My oldest was, I don't know, I can't remember, let's see, 11. He was 11. And so even for him, military life before that, he doesn't really remember that it was ever any different than that Dad was deployed every year or so. He was going to be gone. And just the uncertainty of what that was like.
You know,
we definitely changed things.
Some come back wounded. So maybe give us a little snapshot of the life of a wounded warrior's family.
Well, we've been very blessed that my husband was never wounded, but I've interviewed several wives of military members who were wounded, and one of them, Jacqueline Goodrich, actually I interviewed her for Spouse Calls, and then later the other book that you mentioned that I edited, Stories Around the Table, I asked Jacqueline to write her story for Stories Around the Table, and she had a brand new baby and a 2-year-old when her husband was first injured, and so her children really grew up at Walter Reed and around Wounded Warriors, and she has a real grasp on how that changes the growing up experience for a young child, and that uncertainty that I was talking about enters their life at a very early age, and the fact that bad things happen to people, and that something bad happened to their father, and that if he goes back again, it could be worse, you know. So she writes about the impact that has on young children, and how there's good in it because it gives them empathy and they're aware of human frailty and just the preciousness of life from a very early age. But then it also there's an impact on them that it's hard for children to understand that kind of uncertainty at such a young age. And so she talks about how important it is for her to talk to her children and work through and even have family therapy and those kinds of things to be sure that her kids are processing at an age-appropriate level what's happening to them.
And, you know, again, we hear sadly about maybe issues with the VA hospital and some of those things. But, you know, other than that, maybe we don't really engage unless it's maybe a family member, a friend or neighbor. We're probably not really too connected with those folks that are going through rehab over long periods of time.
Right. And they are also, as well as being in the hospital and rehab, they're also reentering the civilian community. And that's another place where the civilian community can reach out if they know a wounded warrior family to just ask how you can help. And in some cases they've adapted and they've got a system and they're not sitting there with their hand out waiting for someone to help them, but for someone to recognize that they could step in and help in some way is just really a nice thing. There's an organization called the Yellow Ribbon Fund, which I also have mentioned in one of my columns, because a friend of mine, Kristen Henderson, who's also an author, works for them as their communications director, and they do a lot of outreach through civilian communities to help veterans to find employment, to help them to find places to live. In many cases, veterans need adapted homes. If depending on what their injury is, they may need a home that allows them access to be able to use all the facilities in their home. And the Gary Sinise Foundation provides homes for veterans. There are various other organizations that do that. But you know, if you're aware of an organization that helps veterans in that way, you can reach out by giving a donation. You know, that's one way you can help. But if you know of a family, just be their friend. You know, befriend someone. Don't think of them as a charity case, but think of them as a person who's had an amazing experience in life that you could really learn something from, someone who could be a good friend. So, go ahead.
Terry Barnes, my guest today. Terry is a military wife and mother, and she writes Spouse Calls weekly for Stars and Stripes, is author of the book Spouse Calls, Messages from a Military Life. It's also edited Stories Around the Table, Laughter, Wisdom, and Strength in Military Life. Got some copies to give away and love to have you pick up a copy. If you sign up for it, just give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. If you'd like to join the conversation as well, we'd love that. 877-933-2484. If you want to send us a note online, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can just send us a note that way, and we'll get it into the studio here as we talk with Terry. Terry, you've been writing, you know, for 7 years or so. Have you sort of run out of things to write about? I mean, obviously, columnist, that's your job, to come up with a column every week. But, I mean, are there new things or maybe, you know, interviews that you've just done that's just kind of, you know, that you hadn't thought about before? Give us a little summary.
There's never a shortage of column subjects because life, there's always something new in life. There are so many facets to military life. I mean, what you see, I think at the top of the program, you mentioned the homecoming videos on YouTube, and those are a wonderful part of the military story, but they're just part of that story. There's just so much more to military life. There's the day after that homecoming and the week and the month and reintegration after a deployment is a whole story. It's not even just one column. It's a multiplicity of columns because it's different for every person who experiences it. So there's always something new. I am just writing a column about the Arlington ladies, who at the Arlington Committee is a group of military spouses who attend funerals at the National Cemetery, the Arlington National Cemetery, to make sure that every funeral is attended. So that's a column that I've got coming up, to those women who attend those funerals on behalf of family members who can't be there, and what their experiences are, and just what an amazing way it is to remember those veterans who have died, whether they fell in battle or whether they lived a long life and they're now being buried at Arlington. So there's always new stories to write about. I don't ever run short of anything. I write about books for military families. I'm writing about World War II in a couple of weeks. I wrote about a military spouse who overcame an eating disorder. So that everything that is in life is in military life. Hmm. We experience the same kinds of things that civilian families face. We just experience them with the overlay of moving every 3 years and deployments every so often. And so there's that transition that's always coming. But we experience the same things. I wrote a story a few years ago that was about my oldest son when he was graduating from high school, and he walked in and said, "Hey, Mom, this is the last day you're going to have to pack 3 lunches for school." And I just looked at him. I was like, he thought he was doing me a favor. You know, he was breaking my heart. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I realized it was his, you know, it was the last week of school. He was about to graduate. I would never pack a lunch for him again. And I wrote a column about that. And that was something that resonated with a lot of people, not just military, but civilian. It's something that we all go through. So those kinds of things, there's no shortage in life of things to write about.
We're talking spouse calls, messages from a military life. There are a collection of columns from Terry Barnes. Terry writes that popular Stars and Stripes column, and she's with us today on Connecting Faith. And we're going to continue a conversation in just a moment. We've got some copies of the book to give away as well, and you can join us at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Taking an extra day to celebrate the men and women who have served our nation and still serve today. Tomorrow, Veterans Day, of course. Today, the anniversary of the founding of the Marines back in 1775. And also, Ted, we're just saying, what, the 100th anniversary, the end or the beginning of World War
I? I think the beginning of World War I, 1918, it ended. So
that's right.
England just commemorated that with the poppy
right,
fields for all those that died. Yeah, pretty powerful.
Yeah. Terry Barnes has been writing about military life and kind of all aspects of basically all aspects of life. As she said, it just has that military overlay. And she is the creator of Spouse Calls. It's a weekly Stars and Stripes column about military life. It's been in print and online since 2007. She's been a member of the Washington, D.C. Press Corps and has contributed to several other books about the military. And we've got a couple of copies of Spouse Calls here to give away. And you can join us at 877-93-FAITH. Terry, just we were talking a little bit before about some of the columns you're writing about the Arlington Committee, and it reminded me, I wanted to ask you, you know, if your husband's in the active duty military, does that put some limitations on your place in terms of career advancement? Do you talk to some military wives about that?
Oh, yes. That's a huge topic among military spouses. And for me, I've always been able to work at home as a freelance writer, and so it hasn't been as much of an issue. But I know in many career fields, it's not so easy. As I said, the transitions come regularly, and so you build up seniority in a job, and then because your husband gets transferred, then or your wife in some cases, then you have to move. And so many spouses find that it's difficult to sometimes to get a job if an employer knows that you're from a military family and they know you won't be there for very long. Sometimes you don't get hired. In other cases, you get the job, but then in 3 years you have to leave it, and then you start at the bottom every time you move. Another issue is state licensing for things like nursing or law or teaching. You have to get recertified in a new state, and there are some interstate compacts where states have agreed to kind of ease that process for military spouses, but there still is a protocol to follow. There's still a lot of paperwork you have to do, and not all states participate. In some states, you have to take the bar exam again if you're an attorney, or you have to get recertified as a teacher. And depending on your specialty, if you do special education or something like that, then you have to get recertified anyway. So yes, there are a lot of obstacles to military spouses having career continuity, and we are sometimes very creative in ways that we find to manage that, and many times it is a home business or a work at home type situation like I have, and in other cases some military families choose to live what we call a geo bachelor. You're separated for geographical reason. I mean, separated geographically for career reasons. Maybe your spouse moves on to a new assignment, but you stay behind in a job to keep that stability for your family. Some families do it for school reasons, too, for their kids, to keep their kids in the same school. We did that when our oldest son was graduating because he was a senior when we moved, we were going to move. So, but for career reasons, many spouses do that. So that it tends to make us very creative in ways that we try to meet that challenge, and then there are some ways, some policy issues that other spouses are addressing, to like the Interstate Compact, to help with the licensing portability. And the First Lady's program, Joining Forces, has had some visibility on that issue as well. So it is a very common problem for military spouses.
You've been in the Washington Press Corps, and you've seen the good, bad, and the ugly regarding treatment of and maybe beliefs about and even command decisions that affect the military. Would you have any recommendations how we maybe can get the real story of what's going on with the armed forces, maybe besides reading spouse calls?
Of course, yeah, that's exactly what
okay.
How did you know that's what
yes.
I would say? Well, and also Stars and Stripes, actually. Stripes.com is the newspaper for the military, and it's written for a military audience, but it's also a very broad-based spectrum of news. And so that has a lot of news by and for the military community. So that's one good place. But just there's a lot of good reporting by major newspapers about the military, the Washington Post and New York Times, and sometimes local newspapers even. So I would say on any subject, read a lot of sources, because no one source is going to tell you everything. And it's going to give you the full picture. But the best way is to get to know a military family, of course.
Yeah. Hey, let's take a call from Anna in Wisconsin on line one. Anna, you're on with Terry Barnes. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Oh, I'm in tears here. I'm so joyful that this is on, because I'm a wife of a former Marine. I've got a submariner who just got back off a sub. My mom was a 26-year wife. She got a medal herself for my dad. My sister was Army. The only thing we don't have is National Guard, and my oldest boy couldn't make it. So we're at home praying for everybody. So I just want to thank you, and I can't wait to get on Stripes.com and praise the Lord.
Oh, well, thank you for all of your service as a military family member. Anna, you've done a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
it's been great.
Good. Thank you. And Anna, I'm sure, and Terry, she said, you know, a lot of time it's staying at home praying. That's a pretty key role for moms and sisters and brothers too, right?
Yeah, Yes, yeah. Absolutely. There's the poem that goes that they also serve who only stand and wait. Well, really, we don't just stand and wait. We do a lot of things while we're back home. But yes, definitely, that's still service.
If you could rate maybe the most challenging aspect of being a military wife, is there something that would sort of come to the top or sort of resurfaces?
Yes, I think the maintaining stability in a life that is mobile and in a life that changes a lot, that is probably the biggest challenge, because that covers moving, that covers deployment, that covers changes that happen in a family. Normally, every family has to change and grow. And in military life, there's a little bit more change that gets thrown in there to you. So I think maintaining that stability is probably the biggest challenge and that has been the most important challenge for us to meet as a military family.
And speaking of stability, you have a great column where you talked about doing a little cleaning in the basement and finding an old cross that wasn't particularly stable at the base. But maybe if you remember that one, say a little bit
yes.
about that.
I do remember that, and I was in the basement and found that cross and was looking at it thinking, why is this cross? What is this doing in the basement? And it was a wooden cross that was made for my husband during a deployment, and it was just rough wood, and like you said, it was a little bit loose at the base. It had a screw holding it in place, but it had been carried to deployment, and I think they actually used it during worship services. Someone made it for him, and when he was in the field, and he used it for worship services, and it came home with him, and it was moved several times with our family. And when I found it, and I picked it up and looked on the bottom, and it had been made by someone there at the deployment, and I realized he had served with a group during that deployment of pararescue members, and part of their motto is it ends in that others may live, because what they do to rescue people on the battlefield, they risk their own lives that others may live. And it really hit home to me seeing that cross, that's what Jesus did for us. He did it so that we could live. And there are things in military life, though there are plenty of military members who are not Christians, and you don't have to be a Christian to be in the military, but military members live out that principle that what they do that others may live. And so I wrote the column about that. It was at Easter time, and I wrote about that in my column, just that really hit home to me, that rough wooden cross that was in my basement, which now is in my living room, by the way. Yeah. It's sitting in my living room. I moved it to the right place. And so just as a reminder that's why we do, that's why my husband does what he does, and so that's why we as a family do what we do.
You've got just a couple minutes left. Terry, know that, you know, unlike your spouse, you don't walk around with a uniform on each day, so people in the street aren't likely to stop and say thank you for your service and sacrifice. But is there something that you'd like to say in terms of what we say or do or maybe don't say or do to to a military family?
No, there's nothing that you shouldn't say to a military family unless that good common sense would tell you that you shouldn't say to anyone. But just look for us, just be our friends, you know, look for us and befriend us and treat us like you would treat anyone else with courtesy and respect and just maybe a little more awareness of what our families go through.
Well, we're honored to have you on today, Terry, and looking forward to tomorrow. Tomorrow we've got a program where we're talking with a 90-year-old World War II veteran who feels better today than he's felt for years, and he's going to share his story. He was part of a B-17 crew flying bombing runs over Germany in World War II, and just so anyway, just got a great story, and we just want to spend some time today to say, you know, there's still a lot of men and women today that need our support and encouragement and our prayers. So it's good to visit with you, Terry.
Thank you. Thank you so much for spending this day talking about military families. I really appreciate it.
If people want to find your column, that's stripes.com. Is that right?
That's right.
And the book Spouse Calls, it's available from, it's Elva Reza, right?
Elva Reza Publishing. You can find it at militaryfamilybooks.com.
Terry Barnes joining us today. Blessings to you and your husband and the family, and just look forward to reading more of your columns.
Well, thank you so much. It was great being here today.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. Thought we might just celebrate and enjoy a bit of Eternal Father's trying to say as we wrap up today's show. Thanks for listening.